We ready to start?
We are.
I guess we establish a quorum first.
AGP, could you guys come out here and sign us into the laptop, please? So for quorum, Board Member Goldman.
Here.
Board Member Ingrafia.
Here.
Board Member Gaffney.
Here.
Board Member Nava.
Here.
Board Member Beal. And Acting Chair Irwin.
Here.
Okay. We have five here. We have quorum.
I'd like to ask for a moment of silence to remember the victims of the Maui wildfire. Thank you. Who volunteers to do the pledge? Jan Goldman. Does anyone have some announcements they would like to make? Robert Naba?
No.
No? Okay. Greg?
I'll wait for my part in the agenda, which is now. If there's no announcements, I can do mine. Thank you. First off, I'd just like to acknowledge the work and service of Doug Rogers on the Public Works Advisory Board, and inform the board that Doug Rogers has resigned from the board due to time constraints related to his business. And that means that the city clerk's office will be working on a replacement. I'd also like to give an update on Public Works staffing. We have two very critical positions that we've recently recruited for, interviewed, offered, and had offers accepted, one as recently as today. First, we were looking for a replacement maintenance superintendent, maintenance division manager position that was previously filled by Mr. Dale Simpson. We now have an incoming candidate that starts in a week and a half on August 28th. His name is Carlos Mendoza, and he's an excellent, well-prepared candidate with high qualifications coming out of Cambria CSD, where he was a maintenance manager there over 18 years and had high accolades coming out of there. So we're very excited about that. In particular, he oversaw the replacement of the trash cans in the downtown area of Cambria. And Cambria used to have the same trash cans we have out in public. And so they decided to replace those with, like, redwood cans that have planters on top that are filled with succulents. And it's a very beautiful project that was done there, a community project, and something we're really excited about bringing here, something similar. So that's one position. The other position was a sorely needed position in our engineering division, senior civil engineer. Engineers are almost impossible to get right now. Every public agency is looking for multiple levels of engineers. They all pay higher than the city of Morro Bay. Some even have $5, $10, $20,000 sign-on bonuses. But we actually were able to get a very qualified individual who accepted an offer today for senior civil engineer just through our relationships and our working with consultants. So it's something we're very excited about. Eric will be giving a capital projects update later, where you'll learn that we have 48 active capital projects with one engineer working on them. And that engineer, Eric, probably only spends, 20 to 30% of his time on capital projects because of all the other responsibilities that fall under engineering. So the position is sorely needed, and we believe once we have this individual on board, which we anticipate to be sometime in October or November, we'll be able to move through our capital projects much more expeditiously because of that increased capacity. My last announcement is that just an update on FEMA. We have been working diligently with FEMA staff on reimbursements for the damages that occurred during the storms in both January and March. Eric Riddio is taking lead on that initiative, and we actually meet with FEMA staff weekly. We've submitted a number of projects to FEMA already. In categories A and B, those submissions are complete. Category A is debris removal, which we spent a bunch of money on during the storms. And Category B, emergency protective measures, those projects have also been submitted. And we had inspections, and FEMA inspectors come out today, and they'll be out tomorrow again for Category C, which is essentially roadways. So, you know, we are making progress with FEMA. We have a very good relationship with our program manager at FEMA. Her name is Carlene Davis, and her management staff as well. We also anticipate working towards getting hazard mitigation grants through federal FEMA funds. Those are different from the Cal OES hazard mitigation funds, which we also applied for. We've recently submitted a sub-application for one project for hazard mitigation funds through Cal OES, and we think we'll be getting a lot more applications in for the federal side because that's a not really a competitive program that the federal side has. So, again, hazard mitigation, that money goes to work on projects to mitigate future disasters. So something, again, we're looking forward to. We're just not quite there yet. We're still working on it. So those are my announcements.
One question on the FEMA. I've seen other states provide some of the matching funds municipalities would need for their hazard reduction projects. Is California going to be supporting the city that way?
Thanks for the question. Yeah, so they have a matching program called Prepare California for the 404 program, and that would be the 25% that that they would be looking for a local match. So as Greg mentioned, the Cal OES hazard mitigation is much more competitive for there's a very small limited, I think it's $55 million for the whole state. So we did submit a sub application. It's a very lengthy process to submit those. So that's definitely one we're hopeful for, but it's, again, you're fighting for a lot less money. Yeah. Now with FEMA 406, we haven't really gone through the conversations on that. We had, during the inspections today, we had a representative from mitigation out. So he's going to prepare us for if we do pursue some of these, on some of the projects we submitted, actual mitigation, and that's part of the process is that they ask, yeah, will you be pursuing mitigation funds as well? So,
yeah.
Thanks, Eric. And I would just add that the 404 grant through Cal OES that Eric referred to, not only is it very competitive, but the eligibility requirements are complicated. For starters, you cannot have a project that involves infrastructure that was damaged during the storm, which is sort of counterintuitive. The federal money has to be damaged by the disaster, but the state money, it cannot have been. So we were limited to looking at things that could prevent disasters that weren't damaged during this disaster.
Yeah, that's what I understood. I had my experience is North Carolina fully covered the 25% for their disasters because it just made sense for them.
So for California, California is covering 17.75%. So FEMA does 75%. California does 17.75 and 6.25% is left to the local agency.
Okay, well, that's reasonable.
But that's for public assistance, not for hazard mitigation.
North Carolina covered the hazard mitigation, too. Okay. Okay. Thank you. I guess the first item on the is approval of minutes for April 19th. And does anyone have any comments or a motion? April 19th?
I'm sorry, Chair. This is the consent calendar, so the board is being asked to consider as a group A1, A2, A3, A4 for one vote, unless, and you can ask your board members there if any of those items should be pulled. You'd also want to take public comment first.
Okay.
And actually, maybe before we even do the consent calendar, we should take general public comment for items not on the agenda.
Okay. Are there any comments from the public?
Good evening. My name is Terry Simons. I'm not familiar to most of you except for one planning commissioner that seems to have wandered in the wrong meeting. I am a routine public commenter at both the Planning Commission and the City Council level. You could see that from a lot of different angles. But I'm here tonight to just get a sense of how your body operates and what you're doing. I've been expressing at other meetings that Mr. Kowalik attends my admiration for the job that he's been doing with our Public Works Department since he came on board. So I think that you're in good hands, and I'm going to be looking forward to seeing how you run your show. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Betty Winholtz. I took my first walk on the bicycle trail behind the power plant yesterday, and I want to share my observations of what I saw there, some of which are some concerns, particularly if we're talking about getting ready for storms this coming winter. I was a frequent user of that trail before all the construction, and except for the one place that flooded, kind of towards the south end, it was pretty much a level concrete sidewalk, but it fell off on the side, so if it did flood, it kind of went to the side. The way it's been redone at this point, everything's flat, so there's no little ditch on the side, so when the rains come, there's going to be no place for the water to run off to. It's all going to be either dry or it's all going to be wet. And so I just wanted to bring that to your attention, that maybe we need some type of ditch or gutters on the side of the sidewalks to catch the rain. I also noticed that in at least two spots, the chain link fence between that property and the highway has not been restored. And that's a little concerning for me. I think that's part, I don't know if that's a Caltrans thing or if it's a Morro Bay thing, but I think that fence needs to be restored so you can't come off the freeway and end up on the back bike trail or vice versa. And then the third thing that I noticed was down towards the bridge, before you get to the bridge, there are now two dips in the sidewalk that didn't used to exist. And it was all very flat. And so my concern is that when the rains come, that those dips will hold the rain. So when the kids walk to school or bike or people do now, that there will be some catchment of water there that I thought we would want to avoid. So I know that the landscaping's yet to be done, but I also feel like some preventative stuff for the sidewalk needs to be done so we can kind of not have flooded sidewalks like we used to. Thanks.
Thank you. Do we have anybody online?
Thank you, Chair Irwin. There are no raised hands in queue.
Thank you. guess next is the consent calendar. Do we want to approve as submitted, or do we want to pull something to discuss? Jan?
I move that we accept everything as it's presented to us.
And Chair, I would just ask that you first take public comment on the consent calendar first.
Oh, are there any comments from the public on the consent calendar? Okay, and I assume nothing is on the internet.
Thank you. Oh, thank you, Chairwoman. There are no raised hands for public comment.
Thank you. Okay, do we want to consider Jan's movement to approve all four items?
We'll need a second.
Will somebody second?
Yeah, I'll second.
Thank you, Ian.
Okay, we'll do a roll call vote. Board Member Nava?
Yes.
Board Member Gaffney?
Yes.
Board Member Goldman?
Yes.
Board Member Ingrafia?
Yes.
Acting Chair Irwin?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes.
Next item is the business items. Review and comment on fiscal year 2023 quarter four water reclamation facility quarterly report.
Thank you, Chair. As everyone in the room likely knows, the WRF program is starting to wind down with the exception of one component, and that's indirect potable reuse, otherwise known as recycled water. But we still do have two active contracts, one with Anvil and one with the design build team, FBV. And so we do have some updates with regards to those two projects, namely the conveyance project and the plant project. Those will be given by the program manager, Paul Amico. And then Dan Heimel of Confluence Engineering will give us an update on recycled water and indirect potable reuse. Paul Amico is joining us by Zoom today, and he'll give that comment over the radio waves. And Dan Heimel is here in person to give that. So, Paul, can you hear us?
One moment. We got to unmute his microphone. Should be able to talk.
Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes, AGP is coming in a little loud. Can you try again, Paul?
Yes, can everybody hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, great. So if you could please start the presentation, I would appreciate it.
Working on it. Okay, it's up.
Okay. Unfortunately, I can't see the presentation, so I'm going to have to, just permit me 1 second and I will bring up my own presentation. First of all, greetings, Public Works Advisory Board and Morro Bay community members. Again, Paul Amico, been serving as the Water Reclamation Facility Program Manager for a number of years. This is our quarterly update that we provide. I will keep my remarks short so that Mr. Heimel can focus on the recycled water component. And if you would give us the next slide that says overview. As I normally do, we'll provide a construction update, which will, again, be very brief because we're winding the major construction down before we go into the actual quarterly report and talk about our financial position here on the program and then the key accomplishments that we've made to close out the fiscal year 23, ending in 23 and the fourth quarter. So next slide, please, construction update. So as we said, the major construction has been completed, as I'm sure everyone is aware, and community member Winholtz has observed that the bike path is finally open. And so we are now in the final stages of construction in order to close that out, doing what we call the punch list, which are the remaining items that are on the contract that are not on what we call the critical path, meaning the path of construction activities that lead to substantial completion of the project. These are items that are, they aren't necessarily minor in nature, but they just don't rise to the level of being required for the operation of the facilities for its intended purpose. So the pictures you can see here are just some examples of punch list items. We had some base rock around an air release valve on Quintana, some flat work driveway aprons and items of that nature that were completed during this quarter. And then the most notable activity was the completion of phase one and two of what we call the UV challenge test at the Water Resources Center. The UV challenge test is a required testing protocol that consists of four phases required by the Division of Drinking Water to prove out the advanced purification facility that takes the treated wastewater at the Water Resources Center and turns it into purified water for injection into the ground and in the program that Mr. Heimel will talk about shortly. So again, just there's been a lot of activity around completing what I always like to call the million little details that complete these projects so that we can close them out and the city can move on and begin using the facilities without consultants and contractors wandering around getting in the way every day. So next slide, please.
And Paul, if you could maybe, if there's a way to turn down the mic or step away, we've reduced volume over here on your side, but you're still coming in a bit loud.
Oh, and apologies for that. How's that? Is that a little better?
A little bit. If you could do a little more, that'd be even better. And we're on the next slide.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so the quarterly report was submitted to the city earlier this month and includes, as we said, the accomplishments, challenges, and upcoming activities. Total spending through the third quarter, the fourth quarter of 2023 is $139.6 million against a budget of $159.8 million. Even though we've said that the projects are mostly complete, the spending through this quarter would reflect invoicing through the end of the quarter, and so there's invoicing that will remain on the two major construction projects. But for the most part, those are, as stated in the report, those are at a very high level of completion. So 139.6 against 159.8 million. And that includes not just consultant and contractor costs, but also internal costs to the city. Next slide, please. The key accomplishments, as we stated, final punch list items on the Water Resources Center and conveyance, and the Division of Drinking Water testing. Phases three and four of that test plan for the challenge testing were approved by the Division of Drinking Water. And those phases have actually been completed in the first quarter of fiscal year 24. So we have completed the challenge test at this time, and the city and design builder at the Water Resources Center are working through the final acceptance testing so that we can declare that project is in final completion. Anvil Builders is actually on site this week and next, completing the final punch list items on the conveyance facility. So we will be final completion of those projects in the next month to 2 months and can declare those all fully complete. With that, I will turn it over to Mr. Heimel so he can talk about recycled water facilities.
Thanks, Paul. Members of the PWAB, please provide updates on the recycled water portion of the WRF program. The efforts around that program over the last quarter have focused on the groundwater analysis. The city's hydrogeologist, GSI Water Solutions, completed its administrative draft of the basis of design report for the indirect potable reuse recycled water injection and extraction program. And that report really is the vision for how this program will operate, where and how much water can get injected in the ground, how will that water be extracted and made available to the city for beneficial uses, and all of the other kind of considerations that go along with that, such as travel time within the basin, ability to prevent seawater intrusion, and also ability to improve groundwater quality through nitrate contamination dilution. With that completion of that first report, the city then gave the report to a separate hydrogeologist, Cleith Harris hydrogeologist, to perform a full comprehensive peer review of that report and then everything that was in it. And this was really done to really, so the city has done its due diligence with respect to the project to make sure that it has had the best available experts review and evaluate this so that the program can be successfully implemented. So with the review comments, GSI then updated that analysis and began development of the draft report that city staff is working through and sharing with the WRF subcommittee, and ultimately will be coming to the PWEB and council for their consideration. Additional things that occurred in Q4 2022, the city received notification from the Department of Water Resources that its requested grant of $1.2 million for the IPR program was awarded. This is a very, very good news, but it's not necessarily a new grant. This was just another step in the process of getting approval of this grant that the city needed, the final step, really. So confirmation that the city is going to be eligible for that $1.2 million grant to fund the implementation of the indirect potable reuse program. And then additionally, in parallel, Waterworks Engineers was evaluating different IPR pipeline alignments with the basis of design report, the conceptual understanding of where the injection wells would be located. Waterworks is evaluating what are the best routes to run these pipelines to get the water to the wells, taking into account environmental, archaeological, biological, permitting, and cost constraints associated with the different alignments. And so all of this information is really going to be compiled into what we're kind of calling the city's recommendation for phase one implementation of the IPR program, which we're looking forward to bringing to you here shortly. And this is really the recommendation of not what does this program look like at 2045 or whatever full build out looks like with, you know, at 825 acre feet of wastewater available. What does this program look like in the near term? How many wells, where are we going to locate them, where are the pipelines going to be so that we can meet the city's near-term water supply and reliability needs, meet the requirements of the funding and financing loans and grants that the city attained for this project, and then get the PWAB and the council's approval to move forward with that initial implementation of the project. And then we have a schedule slide here. As Paul described, the activities of the conveyance and Water Resources Center are wrapping up. So really the schedule is focused on the recycled water program. And we have, you know, the completion of the basis of design report. Once we have consensus on the phase one implementation or that near-term implementation from the council and the governing boards, we will then or the PWAB, we will then move into the design phase and finalize the permitting and then ultimately construction and startup, currently targeting in 2025.
Thank you, Paul and Dan. And members of the PWAB, that concludes the report. We're happy to take questions.
Any questions? Joe?
I have a question on the overall document, not specifically this present. The program budget, I had a question about one of the numbers. Is it appropriate at this point, or is that for later?
Yes.
Okay. Again, because I don't have any background in accounting beyond distant accounting classes, and as an undergraduate, it was so long ago, I don't want to even run an account. But I'm looking at the program budget indicated 1.2, and then when it comes to construction contingency, which is the last line on that budget, it says to look at note 2, and I've read note 2 now probably 5 or 6 times trying to understand exactly what that means, and I have to confess I don't understand what the note means. So can any of you gentlemen in kind of layman terms, someone explain to me what what note 2 is actually saying. By the way, because I add the numbers up, and I believe the numbers come to about $26 million. I'm wondering what, and that doesn't seem to correspond with the presumably $20 million left to be spent in the overall budget. So that's about as best I can ask.
Thank you for the question, and I'm going to kick that over to Paul. I know that we had two versions of this document, and I believe on the second version we removed that note because it was confusing. So you probably saved the document over the weekend or something. We updated it on Monday, I believe. But I'll let Paul take that question so he can explain what the meaning of that note was.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Qualick. You know, as we've wound down the major construction of the program, the carrying of contingency in a single line item didn't seem to make much as a single line item, as a line in the budget, didn't make much sense for a couple of reasons. One is the city's budgeting process doesn't necessarily, we have to carry those contingencies in the actual components of the program. And so it always posed an issue for us to try to kind of maintain two different spreadsheets that showed that contingency. Now that we're winding down both of the construction projects and the actual cost of the work performed is much, much clearer at this point, it didn't seem to make much sense to carry an overall program contingency because there is only one program component remaining, and that is the recycled water facilities, where we would be carrying contingency to deal with project risks at that level. So we made a decision at the program level to allocate that extra budget, the budget that we had remaining contingency, into that program component. And so in the later version, and the version that we finalized and released as the quarterly report, we just simply say that the contingency was then put back into the additional component. A couple of budget versions ago, we started carrying that as in the city costs line item in the city's budget. And as I said, it became an issue of quality control and being able to account for the dollars in the different buckets where we budget them. I hope that makes sense. I'm glad to answer any questions around that.
Well, I'm afraid that it's not your fault. It's clearly mine. I guess I, like so many people in the community, are just hopeful that the $159 million budget for the project will be sufficient or close to sufficient. So I was just trying to get some estimate at this point as to where we might stand on that. I think a lot of the community is interested in that.
I can comment on that if
okay.
Yeah, if you'd like me to.
I would.
Yeah, so we, as Paul said, we're not really looking at it as individual project component contingencies at this point. It's just budget remaining. So if you look at it, we have around $20 million budget remaining. We don't yet know what the recycled water portion of the project will be. And the reason for that is, as Mr. Heimel stated earlier, we are going to be seeking council direction based on input from the WRF subcommittee and from this body on a phased approach, which we expect will be less expensive. And, you know, one of our goals is to fit the remainder of the project, meet the goals of the project, and satisfy the requirements of our regulators and funding agencies within the $159.8 million budget. That certainly is our goal.
Okay, I had some. No, go on. No, you go first because mine is going to be. So the $20 million is a contingency we have in place in order to complete the water recycle facility. Is that right?
Yes, and any outstanding invoices or settlement agreements with the two construction contracts we still have open.
How much is left to be negotiated on the two contracts?
Well, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to share too much about ongoing negotiations with the contractors publicly, but I really won't comment on that. But again, I'll say broadly that our goal is to remain within the $159.8 million budget.
Okay. One of the questions I had on this base of design report, do we have a recommended number of injection wells yet?
So the basis of design report includes a recommended number of injection wells. It's really targeting the full build-out of the program. And so, again, it's not a near-term amount. And then really the reason for that is in our conversations with the permitting agencies, they want to permit the larger scale, the full build-out version of the program that the city thinks that it might implement. And the reason for that is that they don't want to have to come back and re-permit an expansion of the program at some point in the future. And so the basis of design report has focused on that full build-out, and then as Greg described, we'll be really also developing the strategy for what that first phase of the program looks like.
So right now we have no idea what the first phase is going to be?
We have ideas. We're still working through. There are a number of different constraints that we need to evaluate when analyzing the first phase. One of those is there are certain requirements within the financing agreements that the city has for the WRF program, both the Clean Water SRF program and the WIFIA loans. And so we need to meet those requirements. The other thing that we're analyzing is, you know, how much recycled water does the city really need in the near term? You know, as we keep talking about build-out impacts not only how much wastewater is going to be available in the future, but what is that future water demand? You know, and so given that the city's current water demands are roughly around 1,100 acre feet per year, its recycled water demands to have a reliable, robust water supply portfolio are a lot less than when the city's water demand will be 1,450 acre feet per year at full build-out. So those are just some of the things that we're taking into consideration. The other things we're looking at is what are potentially any additional environmental analyses that might be required from different implementation strategies.
So then, as I go into the weeds, about how many, what's the production for one extraction well that you guys are working on right now?
So the extraction wells or the
injection wells.
So based on the construction and injection testing that we performed at injection well number one, we estimate and we're planning around a capacity of around 100 gallons per minute per injection well.
And that translate to how many acre feet?
It's I can do the math, but it's over 100 acre feet per injection well.
Okay.
And I'll just add a couple things. So we do plan to come back to PWAB with the phase design approach that staff is recommending. We have an obligation to run that by the WRF subcommittee first, so if you sense a hesitancy from us to answer the questions, it's because really our appropriate protocol is to work through the WRF subcommittee first, then come to PWAB, and then go to City Council. I would just add that even though we'd be looking at a phased approach, which would mean less injection wells in the near term, there is certainly a need for more water in our basin. Something I neglected to mention during my announcements earlier on, and this isn't something that anyone in the audience or in the public watching at home would necessarily know, is that right now state water has essentially shut down for the city of Morro Bay because of a damaged pump before state water reaches Polonio Pass. So as you know, about 90% or a little more of the city's water comes from state water, and right now state water is down. We are completely relying on our extraction wells that we already have, plus our reverse osmosis system to treat the water. Some folks may notice that the water tastes better because state water this time of year has the geosmin that kind of smells. It's harmless, but that state water shutdown is going to be going on for another month, and this was unplanned. Had this been last year, when there wasn't all that much water in the ground, we would potentially have a very serious water supply problem in the city of Morro Bay. We're lucky this year in that it rained a bunch and we do have some water in the ground, but I just want to emphasize and let everyone know the seriousness of our water supply issues in Morro Bay in terms of resiliency and reliability, but also as well the promise and potential of indirect potable reuse and recycled water in being able to supplement our water supply to maintain a water supply for our residents and visitors.
Thank you. Let's see now. What was the other question? When is the basis of design report going to be submitted for us to look at?
Yeah, thank you for the question. So again, we're going to go to the WRF subcommittee with our recommendation and vet it through that WRF subcommittee first, and then we'll come back to PWAB. I would expect in a month or two.
Okay.
For a review.
Okay, thank you. Oh, I was taking a look at what was online when I was preparing for this meeting. Where are we in discussions with Cayucas regarding decommissioning? Are we still just kind of waiting, or are we... Have we tentatively approached them on anything?
I'll speak at a high level because that really wasn't on the agenda to discuss today. We wouldn't want to kind of bleed into any kind of Brown Act issue. But, you know, broadly, I think the city is regrouping with the new staff and council members that we have on board, discussing strategy, and we plan on reaching out to Cayucas in the coming months.
Thank you. What's your question, Jan? Okay, thank you. All right.
Just to report back, so 100 gallons per minute running, 60 minutes per hour, 24 hours per day, 365 days per year, translates to approximately 161 acre feet in a year.
So with reasonable shutdowns, it'd be like 120 acre feet maybe?
To take into account for downtime and maintenance and those other activities.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's injected, that's pre-treatment. So once we extract it, of course, we lose some of that water during treatment.
How about how many injection wells is the BOD recommending at full build-out in the 30 years or whatever time frame we're looking at?
Yeah, so I think, you know, if you extrapolate that math, that translates potentially, if they're all at that capacity, somewhere around 5 to 6. If not all the wells can reach that capacity, then potentially more wells beyond that. The basin has a limited production zone, and so that kind of is the constraint for how much capacity you can get into each well. And so you may need additional wells to get more water into the ground.
Okay. Thank you. Joe?
I suppose this is the appropriate time. There was an interesting question that from one of the citizens that I saw in the email about when the, so I can phrase this properly, the injection wells are constructed and the removing of the water from the injection wells in a final purification stage, and then it's available for consumption by the citizens of Morro Bay. And the question was, this water, will it, what will the water cost, and will it be roughly equal to what ratepayers are paying now? Now, I suspect it's a very difficult, indeed it might be even an impossible question to answer at this point, and I'm prepared for that answer, but I thought I would follow up and ask, because it's a question worthy of examining.
It's certainly a good question, and thank you for raising it. Too hard to say right now because we don't have direction on how many wells we'd be putting in. So, you know, at maybe a theoretical build out, we could develop a list of assumptions and put together a scenario of cost. But we prefer to, you know, be conservative and look at what we actually propose to put in and what the cost of that will be. That's something that we'd be bringing back to the PWAB with the basis of design report. So, in other words, too early for us to say.
I understand.
Okay. Let's see. Did you want any
public comment?
Do we have any input we want to?
Can I ask a question to Daryl? Daryl, when you were saying, you said that the number of ejection wells, you don't know that yet, because but each well has like a limited production area. I thought it was. You said each well had a limited production area, and then you held up your hands like this. Does this mean, what does that mean? Does that mean that the amount of water it holds, or?
Yeah, sorry, that was probably not a clear visual representation. What I was trying to help you visualize is, you know, your basin is X deep, but it's not made of all the same aquifer materials. And so really what the city has found over the decades that it's been pulling water out of the basin is the really good productive materials are at the bottom of that basin. And that's the area that the city targets for its extraction wells, where it screens its extraction wells as a target, that highly productive area. And then that's also the area, the portion of the basin that will be targeted with the injection wells. The screens will be located in that portion of the aquifer where there's a higher capacity to push water from the well into the basin. And so that's what I was poorly trying to attempt to help you visualize. But
then the question pops in. I've seen aquifers which are like hundreds of feet, which we do not have, and I've seen aquifers which are like 6 to 9 inches, which I'm hoping we have something considerably above that. Would you, tens of feet?
So the injection well number one had I believe it was a screened interval of approximately 20 feet of that it targeted. And you know, and that's one of the reasons why, the critical reasons why the city went ahead and drilled the test injection well, is to develop that understanding. And then additionally brought in a peer review hydrogeo consultant to do as much due diligence as it can in the design and the planning phase to ensure a successful implementation phase.
So is basically we have about a 10 or 15 foot interval where we can successfully extract water. Is that what I'm hearing?
At least at the location for the injection well number one, it's about 20 feet. And it varies throughout the basin. You know, it's a very heterogeneous, sorry, I can't think of a better term for it, you know, how the material's made up. It's thicker in some areas, it's thinner in other areas. You know, and that's some of the things that we look forward to bringing with the basis of design report is, you know, areas that were identified as being more productive for injection, other areas that are identified as not having as thick of a target production layer, and that may not lend themselves as favorably for siting injection wells.
So if I remember, we put in, was it a 3 or 4 additional test wells, or not test wells, but borings to see what we thought we had?
Yeah, so for the course of this project, I'm aware of one test or monitoring well that was installed. There was one full-scale injection well number one. There may have been one or two more wells that were installed before I got involved in the program. But one of the things that the city was able to leverage is the city has done extensive hydrogeologic analysis of the Morro Basin. And a lot of that analysis was associated with the seawater desal program that went in the early 90s. During that time, under kind of emergency conditions, they drilled boreholes all along Embarcadero Road, both north and south of Morro Creek. And then there's also extensive geotechnical and then hydrogeo data associated with the power plant. There's the seawater extraction wells themselves that give us an insight into the geologic conditions in those locations. And so all of that information, historical information, was able to be leveraged. Like, one of the nice things about a borehole is it the information that you get from drilling a hole in the ground, it doesn't expire. That same aquifer material is there 50 years later. So even though these are historic explorations, they still have the same value as if you went out and punched a hole.
So we've got a lot of good data, it sounds like.
We do. Yeah.
Okay.
Chair, I would ask if there's no other questions from the board that you entertain public comment.
Are there any questions from the public?
Well, here I am, Terry Simons again. This is the Wharf project and all of its implications is something I've been following since the very onset. And as it's evolved, relocated and all of its other things, I've been periodically very critical of certain aspects. One of the issues that I have become increasingly concerned with is the recycling of the water. My concern is that while injected reuse is the historic standard of the industry for taking recycled water, we're right on the cusp of the state approving direct reprocessing of water without having to put it into the ground and then pump it back out. I don't know if we're months or several months away from the state's regulations coming forward on that. I'm concerned that there's so much momentum moving forward to recycling to take water that we've done a tremendous amount of effort to purify and then put it into a groundwater basin that is, I won't use the word polluted because I was criticized for that earlier, but is contaminated with a high level of nitrates and other elements. And then we have to build another facility to reprocess that water again to bring it back into the potable stream. I haven't been able to get anybody to tell me that the cost of doing a processing facility in conjunction with the wharf or the recycling center to create fully accepted potable water for direct injection into our water stream is more or less cost effective than what is currently being proposed with the injection and re-pumping facility. And Greg and I have talked about this, and there's just so much momentum because of the historic direction of the industry, but that's about to change. And I would hate to see us spending whatever it is, $25, $30 million on treating and retreating, injecting, pumping back out, and then treating again, when perhaps it might be timely and cost-effective to install a treatment facilities at the wharf or at the recycling center. And those could be modular, so they could be added in as we need them to supplement our water use, and also that has the opportunity to blend that water with state water. And we have buyers for that water. I spent the afternoon in Los Osos at the Los Osos Basin Management Commission meeting. They have a deficit of water over there that's unbelievable. And we have this surplus of water that we're sending into the ocean. I don't know why we can't get together and share some water. Thank you.
Betty Winholtz again. My question's fairly mundane. It goes back to the punch list for Mr. Amico. Is the re-landscaping of the bike trail part of the punch list?
Do you want to respond? Mm-hmm.
Before I respond, AGP, are there any comments online?
Thank you, staff. We have no raised hands.
Sure, I'll respond. There was a lot there. I'll start with Constituent Winholtz's, or her one question. The tree replacement plan, landscaping plan, is certainly an item on staff's radar, and that's going to be worked out through project closeout. We have a number of items on project closeout, and that's one of them. I think there's an open question about whether we want our current consultants and contractors to work on that, or whether we want to work on that separately. And that's going to be something that's vetted through the WRF subcommittee. So, you know, just to sort of put everyone at ease that, yes, it's on our radar. We know about it. We want to make sure that that's completed. But we want to do that in the most cost-effective and efficient way possible. The other questions from constituents, and I don't know why I'm blanking on your name, right? Simons, thank you, Terry Simons. Yeah, sure. As I mentioned earlier, the costs are things that we're still working out. Anytime you put down a cost, it's based on a number of assumptions, and there are some assumptions that we can't pin down yet until we get direction from the WRF subcommittee, the PWAB, and the City Council. So we will be providing scenarios when we come back to the PWAB where we're looking at costs. It's certainly an intriguing opportunity that Los Osos has three water purveyors that all want some more water security, and Morro Bay is, in my opinion, in a good position to potentially provide that. Whether or not that's in the city's best interest is an open question, and something that, again, we will be bringing at a later date for consideration to the PWAB and as well to the City Council. That there's not really, in my view, a simple answer to that question. But again, the opportunity is there, and it's worth looking at, so that item will be coming back as well.
And another question brought up in my mind was, as I understood it, the injection also would create a reservoir for balancing out flow requirements over the year. Is that something that is included in the BOD or basis of design report?
Yes, the basis of design report includes recommendations for the operational strategy for the injection and extraction program. It in terms of being able to store water in 1 year and access it in future years, this program will probably have limited capability for that. Because it's not a very large basin. You know, the city is relying upon a small coastal basin that doesn't have extensive amounts of water in storage. And when levels drop, seawater intrudes, which we've seen historically here at the city. And so the concept that's being evaluated and likely recommended is that when the city needs to turn to its Morro Basin wells during times like Director Qualick described right now, when the state water system is down for an emergency shutdown, the IPR system would be run at the same time. And so you would be basically ensuring that there's enough water in the basin to meet the needs because you're injecting at the same time that you're extracting, and you're creating that kind of continuous loop of injection and extraction. And so, in essence, it'll provide the same benefit in that you will be able to rely upon it in drought and emergency times, but it won't be like you put it in there 5 years ago and then now you're ready to pull it back out.
More like an annual type thing.
And then the other piece of that I should mention is that there are times, you know, like this year, where it doesn't make sense to inject water into that basin. That basin is full. I mean, we've had a historic water year. Water levels have recovered. It doesn't necessarily, you know, make the best use of the water to inject when the basin levels are high. And so one of the things, and I should have mentioned this earlier, that kind of part of that phase one implementation that the city's looking at is, what are the other uses for that water? And specifically, what are the non-potable recycled water uses or purple pipe uses? And so that, you know, a number of the big irrigation users here in the city are the Lila Kaiser Park, Morro Bay High School, potentially Cloisters Park, and then, you know, probably the biggest one, even though they don't use city water, but a local irrigation or local water user for irrigation is the Morro Bay Golf Course. And so one of the things that's being evaluated is, are there strategies to kind of pair the indirect potable reuse program with non-potable uses? And so at times when the basin's full, you can be putting that water for landscape irrigation needs, and then at times when the city needs it for its potable system, then it could switch back and be injected in the groundwater basin.
think, stand, and I just was told by my colleague here that we neglected to answer the question about direct potable reuse, so I'd like to address that briefly, if that's okay. There's certainly an appeal to direct potable reuse, maybe not by all, but by some, in that there would seem to be less processing of the treated water before it's able to go to the user. This is a very emerging and new process that the state is soon likely to allow. I just have several comments on that. As staff, we would not look forward to being another pioneer in a water treatment process that is a kind of an arduous and turns out expensive task when you're helping the regulators define the regulations, and there's a lot of unknowns in that process. And we did that as there was one aspect of our wastewater treatment plant that was sort of a first, and it just gave us a lot of complications. And I would suggest that given the size of the city of Morro Bay and our budget, that it may not be in our best interest to always be the pioneers, as innovative as we are at times. Another thing is we know that if we went to direct potable reuse, we would have to add another treatment process at the plant. We have some space issues up there. Even though it's surrounded by grassland, that's now covered under a conservation covenant that was required as part of one of the mitigation efforts in our coastal development permit special condition. Not to say we couldn't do it, but you know, that would be a new expense. There would also be additional permitting and regular sampling requirements that we'd have to do that would add operational expense. And finally, I would add, while, again, I do admit that there's an appeal to direct potable reuse, there's one big challenge to using it, and that's when it's sort of like electricity. When you produce it, you have to use it. We don't have anywhere to store it. The one place we could store it is underground, which is what indirect potable reuse would do and achieve. As Dan alluded to earlier, not for the long term, but for the short term, we do get storage in that basin. So it seems to staff, at least, that direct potable reuse, again, while a very interesting technology, may not suit the water supply needs of the city of Morro Bay, in that we wouldn't have any kind of storage mechanism for that water once it's produced.
And Greg, when you say storage, I mean, I take that to mean a fairly large reservoir.
Yes, or something like that. I mean, there's other ways we can store water outside of a reservoir. We can have transfer agreements and store water in the Central Valley and that sort of thing. The challenge there is then we're relying on, you know, hundreds of miles of pipeline that, as we just are observing right now, if a pump goes down, it shuts off. And so the benefit of having indirect potable reuse here in town is that the water is right here. So it's not dependent on something that's happening hundreds of miles away.
Okay, should we ask for a public comment again? Yeah, we have. Okay. Are there any? Is there any input from the board?
Yeah, and any other feedback? This is a receive and file, so there's no vote.
Yes, it just says review and provide input. So, is there any input we want to provide, council? I see no interest in providing comments to the council. Thank you. I think we're done.
Are some of the questions, though, Greg, are these questions the input that you provide to the council? Some of them?
Yeah, we'll provide general input to the city council on what was discussed here.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah, likewise, that would be mine. I mean, I think that it's the discussion of the pros and cons of the injection well system versus the newer technology is worth talking about. Again, I'm not sure what's the appropriate time, but a response to Ms. Weinhold's initial question about the walkway and whether there were curbs at the beginning, which are now been eliminated, and the walkway being more prone to flooding. Is there any comment as to the accuracy of that, or something being planned? Or?
Sure, we can comment on that briefly. The drainage design, so to speak, for the bike path is certainly different than it was prior to its rebuilding. It was graded for drainage. It does have dips, as were mentioned. Those dips are intentional. They're for drainage. Again, if desired, our city engineer, Eric Riddio, who had some limited involvement in that, could speak on it, as well as project manager Paul Amico. Actually, Paul Amico, do you have anything to add on the comments that were made about the bike path and drainage?
Not a lot. I do. So I understand that if you look at the bike path and you notice that there are low points in the bike path, just know that we put a grading plan together, and those low points are there because the runoff coming off of Highway 1 in that location, the bike path took runoff from Highway 1. So we needed to put those low points in the bike path in order to allow the drainage from Highway 1 not to be trapped between the bike path and the freeway embankment, which would undermine the bike path and could potentially cause damage, or would just flood the area and be unsafe. I will note that after that, the bike path grading and bike path paving was completed before the large storms that we experienced this spring. And after those storms passed, all that was required was a little bit of regrading around that, but there was no real damage to the bike path. And in our observations that the regrading of the area actually promoted better drainage in that area than was there before.
Thank you, Paul.
I assume we have no further comments? Or
One other thought, and this was from, let's see if I can remember this properly. At the Planning Commission, there was a discussion of a particular project that required a good deal of infrastructure around this proposal. And there was a suggestion that if the sidewalks were put in, the neighboring properties would probably never have comparable sidewalks and curbs put in, and it might even be a disadvantage if you did it to one property and not another. And the net result was the suggestion that we should prioritize where we put sidewalks and curbs rather than, in a certain situation, simply require some builder to put it there. And I thought that was a good suggestion that we should follow up on, and I'm just curious as to if anyone agrees or, in fact, it's something for future consideration.
Yeah, thank you for your comment, Board Member Ingraffi. I would just say, you know, I would hesitate to encourage deliberation on that, given that it was not on the agenda.
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting deliberation, just for future thought. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, it's something maybe if you'd like, if the board's interested, we could put on a future agenda, so we could look at that.
I'll just make one further comment on the bike path. The drainage at the what I believe is termed the Willow Camp Creek crossing was never part of the scope of the overall wharf project. It was something that would have required extensive permitting, so that's why the pipelines went underneath the creek. But the path, as it passes through the creek, it's still basically in the same location. Now, that portion of the path was constructed out of Portland cement concrete versus asphalt, which is much more durable for those flooding type situations. And as Paul alluded to, that area continued to be the area that flooded the most with as a result of the March rains. But as also he mentioned, north of there, I walked through there after the March storm, after the flood waters had subsided, and the path itself was not, you know, north of that concrete area was in pretty decent shape. I mean, it had some debris on it, as did most areas that were flooded during those storms, but it seemed to perform well, given that it had other areas for the water to cross. So just wanted to add that comment.
I think this item is complete. There is no comment from the BWAB to provide.
Understood. Would you like to move to the next item?
I move that we approach the item B2, capital projects update, and is there any public comment?
So yeah, we can present first and then request
okay.
comments. So I'm going to kick it over to City Engineer Eric Radio, but before I do, just would like to apologize. I mentioned earlier that we updated the Wharf Quarterly Report document itself on Monday. When we did that, the amended agenda then did not include somehow the staff report for this item, for the capital projects update. So anyone who looked at the agenda on, you know, Friday or Saturday or Sunday or early Monday would have seen it, but if not, and we only caught it today, so we're going to get that back up on the website. I believe we have a couple copies on the table in the back there. So wanted to call that out. Also, we're going to be taking a different approach this time. In the past, we've gone down the long spreadsheet and gave an update, even if small, on each project. Because there's just so many projects, City Engineer Radio is going to present on four projects, but the hope is that the PWAB has had a chance to review all the projects on the list, and we can certainly answer other questions for other projects that we don't go over or give highlights to. So with that, I'll kick it over to City Engineer Eric Radio.
Thank you, Director Qualick. Yes, as Greg mentioned, we did print some copies of the staff report and the summary table that are on the table off to the north, I guess. So if folks need that, I don't know if anyone on the...
Yeah, I would like to see it.
Okay. So the staff report and the table did not change from the original version that was distributed. So I'll be talking on some of the projects, but certainly if there are any questions on any of the projects, I'd be happy to take those. I also want to mention that we do have, just make a plug for one of the capital projects that's in process right now. I know we've talked about it at past PWAB meetings, and certainly in talking about traffic items, we've initiated a contract with a consultant to perform our first local roadway safety plan process, and our first big event is going to be September 6th, right here in this building. And there is a flyer over there that has a QR code, and we'd love for people to sign up and let us know that you're coming, but it takes you to an Eventbrite website where you can respond that you're coming. You're certainly welcome to come without responding. That sheet also talks a little bit about the LRSP process. What is an LRSP? And it's our first workshop. It's not going to be a public meeting, as in that's a Brown Act meeting or that's televised or but it is a workshop similar to what we did with the 141, where we have some organized conversation and then and a presentation and then some question and answer period as well. So encourage folks to attend. All right, so as we've done in the past, we try to bring, I want to say quarterly, that's our hope at least, an update on capital projects. Capital projects, as you know, are a massive part of our city's budget. It's how we spend our money on infrastructure and other things. So, you know, it seems fitting to bring an update to the Public Works Advisory Board. As Greg mentioned, we have 48 total active capital projects, some more active than others for a variety of reasons. 31 of those are with new fiscal year 23-24 funding. That doesn't mean that they're necessarily new projects. It's just that budgeted funds for the new fiscal year were dedicated to those, to 31 projects. This is a staggering number. Of course, a lot of this is from the wharf, but $241 million in active capital projects currently. So $81 million excluding the wharf project. We have five projects actively in construction closeout, 37 in design or pre-design. That's, and you probably noticed that's a large amount of projects to have in that phase. And some of those are new, but a lot of those are legacy projects that are very are multi-year and complicated related to our water and wastewater infrastructure. And I know we've spoken on those, and we will be speaking in the future on a couple of those at future PWAB meetings related to sewer mains that need to be replaced and the Nutmeg tank or the Nutmeg pressure zone, which is probably one of our biggest water-related capital projects that's upcoming. So six projects are plans or assessments. So that's those fall under the capital projects umbrella. But some examples of those would be the One Water Plan, which we have an update that's in the budget for the 2018 document. We have a waterways management master plan we're looking at, you know, as a result of the storms. We had a visit with a neighboring city that has a very proactive approach to waterway management, creek management, debris, and so that's something we're looking at ourselves, is looking at how do we manage our waterways better, and not just as a city, but hopefully in coordination with the county as well, since a lot of those areas on the creeks are outside of the city limits. The LRSP, as I mentioned, and then the FCNA, which is Facilities Conditions Needs Assessment. We have two of those, actually, one for the harbor itself, and then the other is for the other facilities throughout the city. So a quick update on the Facility Conditions Needs Assessment. I know that at a past meeting, there was a comment about needing to see action on this, and we had already released the RFP on that. So we received three proposals, and we're in negotiations with one consultant now to hopefully start that work in September, October. The total budget for that project is $200,000, which seems to be a very aggressive budget for given the number of facilities. Even for a small city, we have a lot of facilities because this does include parks. It does include pump stations and other things. And those are some things we're looking at maybe prioritizing and potentially moving off of the scope to maybe the pump stations would be better suited for our one water plan, looking at all of the utilities facilities together. So those are some things we're working through right now. And this visual is not intended for you to be able to read, I'm sorry, but it's just some of the output of a facilities condition needs assessment, gives you financial information, neat bars, you know, graphs and charts and spending plans. That's all part of the scope of this, is to help us better budget for the future needs based on what our facilities condition currently is and what it's projected to be. I think we've mentioned in the past, and I know at council meetings, the completion of the transit hub. It was the construction was fully completed in mid-July. Now the bulk of it was completed well before the first art in the park, but there were some items such as fencing and some of the electrical features that had very long lead times, so we were able to get everything completed in mid-July and slightly under budget at $520,000 total cost for the project. Another project that's been going on for a while, and folks who have seen, well, certainly on the north end of town have seen activity on the Blanca tank site, is our water tank rehabilitation project for six of our largest water tanks, four of them at the Blanca site and then two at the King's tank site. So to date, the King's 2 tank and the two Blanca 1 and 2 welded steel tanks are completed as far as recoating. The Blanca 3 and 4 are nearly complete with their rehab. They were bolted steel tanks, so it's a little different process on those, but those are near complete. And then King's 1, the bigger, older tank at the King's site, is scheduled to start right after Blanca is complete. And our updated forecast is December of 2023, so of this year. So looking forward to finally completing that project, and the total budgeted cost is $3.3 million for that. We have various pavement projects. Some of them have been delayed due to, the storms have created a lot of extra work for our engineering department. We were in the middle of doing our fiscal year 21-22 project, the arterial dugout project, got interrupted by the storms, and the work that still remained was on South Bay Boulevard, and due to scheduling with the contractor, lots of emergency work statewide, countywide, and because of the condition of South Bay, being that it's right near the water and the subgrade just wouldn't dry out, we finally are now this week doing the work, doing the rest of the digouts, and then there was a bunch of, there was some damage due to the storms. Choral Creek actually overflowed its banks, and South Bay Boulevard was underwater in both storms and caused considerable damage to the shoulders. So that was work that we were successful in getting funding from FHWA at 100% funding for that. And we had a contract with Papich. We were able to amend that contract to include that emergency work. So that's being done this week as well. So the total construction with the storm work is $1.6 million for the pavement. And I'll also mention we also added an interim repair of the Preston Lane, which was severely damaged. I mean, the roadway was in pretty bad shape before the storm, but it really, it literally became undrivable after the storm and really affected those businesses. So We spent $100,000 on an interim repair of grinding out the old asphalt and installing grindings, and it is really performing quite well. I would encourage you to go out and drive it. It doesn't look like normal asphalt, as you would expect, but it really packs down, and the surface is very even, so that when we do obtain funding to be able to pave that, all we would have to do is basically grind off a couple inches and put down the asphalt right on top. We've essentially built the base section for the road, so that was a very innovative technique that we worked with the contractor to come up with. So as I mentioned, some of our other pavement projects, the funding is still there. We have it earmarked for paving, and we're getting late in the paving season, so we're still working on those, but it looks like we're probably looking at construction into early next year, hopefully by the spring, and hopefully can get some assistance on delivering more capital projects. So that concludes my formal presentation on some of the highlights of capital projects, and happy to entertain any questions.
Is there any public input?
Terry Simons again, and one of the challenges or disadvantages of living in the county as long as I have, 55 years, is you tend to remember too much. At least I'm still remembering it, I don't know. I was prompted by the comment about Choro Creek overflowing its banks. The reality is that what we used to call twin bridges was replaced 20 or 30 years ago, I'm not sure just when, but a long while ago, when that concrete structure was built, I worked in and around that project, and you could drive a tractor under that bridge. If you go out there today, you'll find that that creekway has sedimented in to the point to where there's maybe 2 feet under the bridge in what should be the creekway. Recognizing that the estuary and all the ESHA concerns and everything will probably be burdensome to overcome. When you look at the tremendous cost and damage to public facilities by not keeping that particular creekway open, not to mention the fact that the South Bay Boulevard was closed for 2 days, and you're talking about an arterial road that handles over 10,000 cars a day, I think and the third feature of this is it's a tri-agency situation. You have the city of Morro Bay, the state of California Parks, and the county of San Luis Obispo all share responsibility in that area. And so coordinating those three agencies is additionally challenging. It really seems to me that somebody should take the lead. And I think historically Morro Bay has taken the lead in the Twin Bridges area to do what needs to be done to get that undercrossing, that creek, Choro Creek, under that bridge, reduced back down probably 6 or 8 feet of excavation and dredging out of that way to get the water so it flows under the bridge instead of over the top and down the road and tears up the roads on both sides. I think that's something that the city, the county, and the state basically were overwhelmed in this flood situation, but it was obvious and coming for years. You could have preempted that disaster by taking a serious look at preventive maintenance, and that's something we've experienced with this last floods in the January, that there are areas where we know there are problems, but we simply can't find the time or energy to do anything about them. And I don't know how to bring those things forward, but I guarantee you the South Bay Boulevard crossing of Twin Bridges at Choro Creek is one of those areas that really, really needs to be looked at. And I would hope that our public works staff would find time and manpower to coordinate that. Thank you.
Is that bridge in county or city jurisdiction?
City.
Okay.
Can we pick up his comments on AGP or the comments online?
Thank you. There are currently no raised hands in the queue.
We got one more here.
My name is Onan Champy. We're a local property owner here in Morro Bay. We are remote property owners. We were fortunate enough to buy a small piece of property on Errol Street 2 years ago prior to the floods. I just have one comment with in consideration with your waterways plan in the future. There was a lot of debris and collection and cleanup that accumulated around our property for about 6 months, and the final cleanup was actually just done yesterday by some of the neighbors. And in the future, we would just appreciate if we had some communication with the city. And as far as cleanup procedures and things like that, we tried to accommodate as much as we could, being an open portion next to the mobile home park there to get a lot of debris out, but had a very hard time getting communication achieved. So if you could figure out a way to possibly help some of the homeowners that are in that recessed area, we had a lot of water roll through there. So thank you.
Any questions on the board?
Could the department respond to the business of the buildup of debris under the bridge?
And I have a question, too, which I'd like to offer before I. I know FEMA's hazard reduction things would allow a restoring drainage in the various creeks and bridges around the city. Has that project been is that project going to be repaired and submitted to FEMA?
So I'll answer both of those questions, but if I may respond to the homeowner that just came up for public comment, that please email me. If you go to the city's website, you can find my email address from the Public Works Department, Greg Qualick. I'd be happy to communicate with you and anyone else down on Errol Street. I know that Errol Street was impacted, and we did have some dumpsters down there and some equipment. But, yeah, if there's anything we miss, we certainly want to know that. So please reach out. As to the Choro Bridge, Choro Creek issue, just I've got a bunch of comments on it, so bear with me. But, you know, first off, I'll answer directly that, yes, we did seek out hazard mitigation funds through Cal OES. They were ineligible. Through FEMA 406 hazard mitigation funds, they're not eligible because there was no damage there at the bridge. And I don't know if you want to comment on that briefly.
Yeah, well, we did submit the damages that occurred. So what we don't know, and this is probably something we'll look into, is that the nexus of those damages were caused by the creek overflowing, but then drawing, you know, usually they focus on that damage, and would they consider maintenance or clearing out of the creek as far as eligible? That remains to be seen. I think it's something we would certainly.
Has that question been asked FEMA yet?
It has not. We, again, on most of the work as far as damages are concerned, we're still working through Category A and B. We just did today our first round of site inspections, and this is just for the January storm. So they haven't, the March storm hasn't even, it became an emergent or a federal recognized emergency just like a month ago. So again, the lag time in getting the site inspections, but that is part of the process of the site inspections. They ask, will you be seeking hazard mitigation? I think that's something we will definitely look at for that area.
If I may finish my comments there, because I want to respond to constituent Simons. You know, broadly speaking, yeah, we're going to look at ways we can clear out that creek bed. It's going to be very expensive. It's going to be disruptive. There's another agency that's involved. That's the National Estuary Program. I would comment that while the creek bed does not have the clearance it once did, the National Estuary Program has instituted adaptations upstream that arguably mitigated any flooding that would have happened there. They have purchased easements and, in some cases, ag land where they intentionally let the creek spill over so that it floods out the whole area rather than all rushing down into the estuary. So that's just something to think about. We would want to work with the National Estuary Program as a partner to see what we could do under the bridge itself, because it is a concern. Also, some of the damage that occurred on South Bay Boulevard was due to tidal influences. And so, you know, given climate change, it's not entirely clear that clearing out under the bridge would fully do the job, given that when we have king tides coming in at the same time as a major historic storm, the tides are already overtaking the roadway. And that's a pretty big problem that we may never honestly have a solution to other than raising the road itself. But again, those are things we'd look into. Another influence that impacted the roadway on South Bay is water simply rolling off of the hill there and crossing and sheeting over the road and deteriorating the road in that way. So that, you know, is still an area of damage that wasn't directly influenced by the creek itself. That said, we know that SLOCOG is planning on applying for a grant to come up with a climate resiliency plan in that area, and that's something that we would be partnering with them on should that plan be developed. And also, as Eric mentioned earlier, we have our waterways plan that we'd like to work on and get that project in the waterways plan so that we could then pursue grant funding. But certainly that is not like a this year or even next year project.
5 years. But what I do want to say, and this is my personal experience, is to do any of this work there, you should be mentioning to your FEMA representative that there are two hydrological studies that I can think of. One is for Toro Creek, for Morro Creek, and the other one is going to be for Choro Creek, where FEMA is pretty possessive about those studies and will perform them themselves. But you want to get them thinking about those studies as soon as possible. And then that will define what the design condition is and what's required to restore it to that design condition. And that FEMA's focus is always a restore design capacity followed by mitigating future hazards too if they can. And that should be the approach to dealing with flooding in those two areas.
Noted.
Yeah. I have some questions about this LSRP program. You asked me to participate. Do I get to bring my own comments too, or do I have to take what comes from the citizens?
Yes, you can bring your own comments.
Thank you.
You're a member of the stakeholder group, so yes, you certainly bring your own comments to that meeting as well. So
can I ask for comments from acquaintances and stuff like that too? Because yeah, I mean, I know North Side pretty well, but I don't know South Side very well.
So yeah, thank you for the question. You wouldn't necessarily be coming as a formal representative of the PWAB,
okay.
So it's totally appropriate for you to, you know, ask questions and get input from anyone you can.
Okay.
And bring those questions and comments to the meeting.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? This portion of the B2, I think, is complete. I don't think we're going to be providing many comments, or do we want to provide input to that? Okay. No Thank further you. Comments. Yep.
So we're at the future agenda items.
Yes.
And we've noted the suggestion from board member Ingrafia already. I would just ask if there's any other potential future agenda items. We have on here already that we'd be bringing in September the SB1 project list. That's our kind of plan for the next year on which roads we'd be paving and maintaining that we'd have to submit to the state. The deadline to do that is in September. We'd have to get a resolution from the city council at the second meeting in September. We'll be bringing the list prior to that to the PWAB. We do have an interesting consideration. Again, we're not going to discuss it right now, but I'll just say on Beachcomber, we'll be seeking input on some kind of alternative implementation strategies there. Currently, we have sewer lines going behind the homes, in between the homes, on an easement, and there's all sorts of development that's taken place there, from outdoor fireplaces to fencing, and the city is going to consider whether or not to move all the laterals, or not the laterals, the sewer mains onto the roads themselves. Again, we won't discuss that today, but that's something we plan to bring hopefully in September. And then again, the local roadway safety plan update that Mr. Riddio spent some time addressing. But we'd be open to any other potential ideas to bring back to the PWAP.
Would SB1 include the paving and sealing projects that are?
It would, yes. But just to note, the SB1 list is sort of like a living document. What we submit to the state is not necessarily anything we're bound to.
I would like to see what the final list of ceiling projects you have planned to, and just a list.
Yeah, so let me just clarify. We did submit an SB1 list last year. It's required annually. And that list had several of the streets that were going to be surface ceiling. Of course, as I mentioned, we didn't get to that project this year. It'll be early next year. But this SB1 list is, you say what you're going to utilize this next fiscal year's funding on. So, we'll discuss some of the ideas we have on that. But as you mentioned, the prior SB1 list was heavily focused on surface seals, just trying to keep a lot of these roads that are in good shape and keep them in good shape before they get into the poor category. So,
thank you. Do we have any comments on future agenda items? Should I request public input? Okay. So what I see here is it makes sense to me. Does anyone want to?
So it's just, if that item is over, you can just adjourn the meeting.
Okay. So since there's no further comment or work, I move that we adjourn the meeting for the next meeting is September 20th, 2023 at 5:30 at the Veterans Hall.
Thank you. And for the record, meeting adjourned at 7:16. Thank you.